Fantastic. We are now ready to get started. We have a wonderful panel here who are keen to share their experiences, their career snapshot, their education snapshot, and just the path that they've taken on their career trajectory in a science-related career. Really looking forward to digging in and hearing from them. And again, wonderfully done before. Form a queue, lots of questions. This is why they're here. They're here to talk to you. So what we're going to do is give them about 3 minutes each to do a little introduction, and then we'll dive right into questions. And if you have a question, truly, in the middle of the introductions, pop up and line up. All good. Better you ask the questions than me. Your questions are much more creative. So let's start with Nicole.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name's Nicole McClellan. And my career started at the University of Waterloo, where I did my undergrad in microbiology. I started out in pre-optometry and totally changed my mind after taking some biology courses. And then I worked for a couple years in civil engineering in drinking water treatment as a microbiologist. And that got me really passionate about my career path. And from there, I did my master's in civil engineering at Waterloo. It's kind of a cross between civil and environmental engineering, and I was focusing on drinking water treatment. And that got me a job at Stantec Consulting, which is here in Kitchener. And I work as an environmental scientist there. Mostly, it's kind of a vague title, but I mostly work on drinking water treatment, plant design, and upgrades to keep your drinking water safe. And now I'm going to be doing my doctorate at the University of Guelph in environmental sciences, looking at risk assessments in drinking water treatment. In my spare time, which little I have, I work as a board member for a charity called Hands Across the Nations, and I was able to apply a lot of my skills from my career to develop clean drinking water projects in Mali and West Africa, and in Bolivia and South America. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Shohini.
Hi, my name is Shohini Ghosh. I started out at an early age with an interest in physics, so I ended up going for a bachelor's degree in physics, and I still liked it, so I kept on and did a master's and finally a PhD in physics. And that was all in the US. After I finished my PhD, I moved to Calgary, where I did a postdoc in a really cool place called Institute for Quantum Information Science. That's my area of research. I look into how do you use the laws of quantum physics to build new devices, super fast quantum computers, way faster than anything you have today. And to do new things such as teleportation, and yes, it is possible. So yeah, I get paid to do that. It's amazing. So I moved to Waterloo in 2005 and took up a faculty position at Wilfrid Laurier University, which is just down the road here. And I teach in the physics department there, and I continue to do my research in quantum physics. And one of the things I've also been involved in is trying to get more female students in physics and other sciences. So we now have a Center for Women in Science at Laurier that is involved in events like this. So yeah, that's me.
Thank you very much. Tanya.
Hi, my name is Tanya Shanoff, and I am a hydrogeologist, which means rocks and water. I study, I guess, a combination science like Dr. Ocampo was talking about. My career started in geology, like Dr. Ocampo. I am a rock geek at my heart. I love rocks. I have a giant rock collection. My children think I am very weird. I am very passionate about geology, and as I studied geology, one of the things that fascinated me was the way geology and the environment are connected. And not only that, how water and geology come into play in terms of supplying us with a water supply, as well as how it can be impacted by the things that we choose to do as human beings on this planet. So I started my career in environmental consulting, and that's what I do. I work at Stantec as well in town. I study contaminated sites, so sites that are impacted by industrial processes, manufacturing, stuff like that, and help them try and clean them up so they can turn them into other beneficial reuses. And a lot of the work I do now is with pipelines, which there are a lot of in Canada, and we help do emergency response and clean up on pipeline spills. My passion is geology, and I do that in my spare time. I have twins that are five, and I try and turn them into rock geeks at every opportunity I have, which works sometimes, but not always. I'm super excited to be here today and be part of this event, and hope to encourage some other young women to look at geology and hydrogeology as an interesting path forward.
Thank you very much. And Sharon.
Hi, guys. My name is Sharon Beals, and I head up the Food Safety, Quality, and Regulatory Affairs Department for Maple Leaf Foods. My degree is actually in human nutrition and food science, and when I graduated more decades ago than I probably care to remember, I was at Girl Scout camp when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon. I know exactly where I was watching a 9-inch black and white screen with knobs. Does anybody have one of those? Okay. When I graduated from college, there were very few jobs available. I thought I was going to go into research and development and develop all new foods, and that was really exciting. And I went down to an Institute of Food Technology meeting in New Orleans and interviewed with a company called Landafrost, and I thought, oh, these poor people, it's Land O'Lakes, and they screwed up their sign. And the gentleman that I interviewed with, Dr. John Butts, says to me, have you ever been inside a meatpacking plant? And I said, no, but I've seen Rocky twice. Does that count? And, you know, found out later from my friends, you're never flipping a job interview. Well, it's 32 years later, and Dr. Butt still tells that story. He said, you know what? You knew what you didn't know, and you had a sense of humor, and we could teach you the rest. So here I am, 32 years later, still in the meat business, did a stint with Arby's for 10 years, always food safety and quality. And, you know, my passion comes from love science, love chemistry, as I said earlier. Physics, love the labs. The theoretical stuff, not so much. And love to cook. And it's my mom who said, you know what? What about nutrition? And I get to Cornell, and the three paths for nutrition were nutrition like research. And then I found out I had to kill rats. And I thought, yeah, you know, maybe not so much. And then there was dietetics, and I thought, you know, I really don't want to be doling out, you know, peas and carrots on Tuesday and chicken on Wednesday. But the foods option, which got us into the food lab and creating things, was an option. And that's where I went. Never thought in a million years I would be at a meat company. But here I am, 30 plus years later, love what I do. And again, just like the other panelists, hope we inspire you guys to keep down that science track, because there's a myriad of opportunities for you.
Thank you very much. Well, let's right away jump to a question that takes you back to their shoes. So when you were in high school, is there an event that shaped or steered you into the sciences that you remember when you were in high school, or maybe at first steered you away and then you somehow made your way back? What was it like for your high school? And we'll start with Nicole.
All right. Well, my high school was very math and science based, and so was my family history. So I didn't even open my blinders to the other faculties or fields that were out there. And that was probably one of my fallbacks when I got to university and I learned about all these fields that I hadn't even heard about before, like kinesiology and health studies and engineering and environmental engineering and sci business. And I learned of all these friends of mine in my residence who, you know, were in these tracks, and all these friends were in sci-biz, and I'm like, what's that? That sounds so cool. So I think I really shortchanged myself by not, doing enough research on that. But like I said, it was very math and science based, and I sat down with my father, and we made a list of all the careers that maybe I wanted to do, which included everything from an electrician to an optometrist to like graphic design and working for Disney someday. And he felt like optometry was the way to go, and I just believed so much in what my father thought that I said, okay, that sounds like a good deal for me. And the best advice he gave me was, go do your first year, and if you don't like it, that's fine. It's okay if you fail that. It's okay if you don't like it, because then you've learned so much. And so that's what I did, and that's how I got to where I am today.
Thank you, that's great. Shall we just follow the loop back? Okay,
sure.
Shohini, you're up.
So I did my high school actually in Singapore. So my parents had moved there actually just after I finished grade 10. So being in Singapore was a bit different culturally, you know, new country and new friends, and it was kind of hard. School was great. I was in an international school, a lot of good science teachers and math teachers. But I do remember one incident, which, you know, was, you know, looking back, probably did spur me quite a bit. I was, you know, we were sitting in a group with some friends, and, you know, there was some science talk, and I jumped in. I was talking about this, that, and, you know, somebody was like, yeah, but, you know, you're just a girl, you know? Ooh. Yeah, this really happened, and I can't remember exactly how it came out. So I think that, of course, I had no idea what to say back then. Now I know what I would say. So, but I think I went away, and I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna show them. So, you know, in my science classes, I made sure to, you know, be the that one student who was always, you know, able to have that question, and I probably was, in the end, became known as a kind of a know-it-all, which is not very good for your social life, but, you know, I think in the end, it may have been what spurred me to, you know, make that extra effort, and I found in the process, I learned what I really liked. I figured out that it's not just about, oh, let me show them. You know, it's about, oh, I like this stuff because, you know, I can work out these, you know, incredible ideas and learn about the universe and the laws of nature, and, you know, those things made sense to me. So it was more than just, oh, let me just show them. So in a way, that sort of negative incident led to, you know, really, really me finding out what I really like. And yeah, that's what, you know, initially started me on that journey, and kept going.
Thank you, Shohini. And let me also now invite you to come to the mics as we continue along. You can start the queue. Your questions are better than mine, remember? Go ahead, Tanya.
So I had a really interesting teacher when I was in high school who was one of the first, who graduated the first class in physics at Waterloo in 1960-something or other, and she was one of three women in her class. And she was my physics teacher in grade 11, or grade 12 and grade 13. And she was a very interesting lady, and she happened to have a son at the school who was in my classes as well. And she always told stories about being a woman in science and sort of pioneering and working, and I thought that was really great, and I'd had a lot of good role models and examples of women who had worked and really encouraged and said, you know, go do what you're going to do, and always sort of been keen on science and math and learning that stuff. And I remember my teacher's son was in my chemistry lab, and we had this horrible titration project. It was just miserable, and you had to do titrations for what seemed like 2.5 weeks to try and get everything perfect and report on it, and we would be after school mixing this stuff with pipettes and doing these horrible things to try and get the perfect titration. And he said to me at one point when I was working with my partner, like, well, you guys are girls, you're not gonna do very well. And I'm like, what? No, I don't think so. I'm like, I'm gonna rock this. So my partner and I spent probably way more time than we should have, and we got the best mark in the class for the titrations, and then I had to show it to him, and then I took it to his mother, who was also my teacher at the time, and showed her, and she said, yes, do it. So that was a great event in my science history.
Oh, wonderful. And Sharon.
Well, as I said, my mother helped me spur me on my trajectory, but when I got to school, it was the professors. Dr. Marge Devine, I still remember my Nutrition 115 class, like it was yesterday, and just an inspiration. You know, here's a woman who at the time was probably mid-50s, the age I am now, and just a pioneer. And all the professors that I had, Mrs. Pimentel and Dr. Armbruster were just, you know, Dr. Armbruster was the only woman to sit on the International Microwave Institute. And she was Gertrude Armbruster. Now there's a name you don't forget, okay? But she was just a geek's geek and didn't care about the fact that she was a woman and in science and a pioneer in her day. And so those are the women that just along the way said, you know what, you're in the right place at the right time, and keep going.
Thank you. And it looks like we have some questions for them. Let's go to this side first.
Hi, I forget your name, the hydrogeologist.
Tanya, yeah.
Tanya?
Yeah.
I'm actually planning on going into geology next year, so it's actually pretty cool that you're here. How competitive is the field of geology, and how is that affected at all by being a woman?
I don't know. I think now there's a lot more women in geology. I mean, there was quite a few when I went. I was probably in a class that was 40-50% comparatively to 15 years prior to that, because geology is a pretty old science, let's say, in the frame of that. I mean, people have been studying geology for hundreds of years as hobby and then as actual science. But I think there's loads of opportunities for women. If you're ready to get in there and get dirty and go out and you love doing field work, you will do just fine, because it's a fairly open field. There are a lot of women in role, like Dr. Ocampo, and a lot of women that have risen in positions of research and within the industry who are really good mentors and women to look up to who do geology and who are recognized in our business. And yeah, it's a fantastic field, and if you have a real passion for it, it's amazing. You'll have a great time.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. And a question here.
My question is also for Tanya. You said that you worked with contaminated sites in with water and stuff. So were you at all involved with the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico?
In the Gulf of Mexico? I was not involved with that, and I'm really thankful I wasn't, because that was, wow, what a nightmare. I have worked with several of the teams from other companies that have done the work down there and have been part of that. One of the cool stories I heard, I was being trained by TRG, who was one of the emergency responders there and did a lot of the work in Louisiana. They were telling me, because the amount of documentation they had to generate, they actually had an airplane hangar full of banker boxes and all the documents, the emails, the phone calls written down, the printouts of things. They had a full airport hangar that then would have to be reviewed by the lawyers because of all the litigation that's pending on this. And I just tried to imagine all that paper and all those trees. But that one was a huge disaster, I think. Pretty much everybody in the world would like to not see happen again, especially the oil companies, and there'll be more to come out of that. And you'll hear more about it, and as things are, like litigation is settled and things are sorted out, and hopefully new technologies, new approaches to mitigating those kinds of risks come about because of this.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And to my left.
Hi, this question's for Ms. Sharon. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you studied at Cornell, mm-hmm. and I was wondering, how did you like Cornell? And for like students in university, like what should you do at university to help you better prepare for like career in the future?
Okay, love Cornell. Now sit on a food science advisory committee, so it's good to get back on campus. And you know, I think the best advice I would give folks, I mean, my best friend and college roommate was an econ major, and she had four required courses in 4 years. I had four classes I took just for fun. Everything was either required or a prerequisite. And Carl Sagan happened to be on campus when I was at school. He used to drive around in his little car with Phobos. Does anybody know what Phobos is? It's one of the moons, right, of Mars?
Yes.
That was his license plate. And I never took a class with Dr. Sagan. It's like, God, what was I thinking? Because at the time, it was just Cosmic Carl on the campus, you know, big deal. So the advice I give to people is do something just for fun, and do something that's outside of science, outside of your comfort zone. Take some business classes. You know, one of the things that I think probably all of us, the reason we're here, is we're able to take the science and explain it to somebody who's not science-based. And, you know, so if you wanna be a technical track, that's great, but you still have to be able to explain yourself. Does anybody watch the TV show Bones? Yeah. I started the series, my daughter got me hooked on it, and it's the one where Temperance is giving testimony, and she's speaking way up here, and she loses the jury until she starts personalizing it. It's the ability to take the science and be able to explain it to folks that don't have that basis that you guys have, or that passion that you have, and they understand it. And that's what I would strongly recommend when you're in school, you know, get your core stuff down, take some stuff just for fun. I so wish I had taken the wine tasting class my roommate did. and I'd taken a class with Dr. Sagan. I didn't. I did have a Nobel Prize winner teach me chemistry, so that was very cool. He did really cool experiments. But take some business stuff. If you really want to get, you know, if you want to get maybe into management or outside of that technical track, because it'll enable you to speak to others.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And here.
This is for Ms. Shohini. I was wondering what your opinion is on the plausibility of the string theory, because I have no idea what to think.
Well, you're at the right place, right here. What am I allowed to say here?
Anything you'd like.
So, you know, there's a lot of experts, you know, in this institute that, you know, work on string theory. My own area is not actually string theory, but, you know, it's a very interesting area, for one thing. So, you know, the idea is to find a theory that will sort of explain or connect all these different parts of, you know, areas of physics in a sense that we have, you know, things like gravity and electricity and magnetism and quantum physics and so on. What I know of it as of now is that, you know, there's a lot of progress being made and there are lots of very different idea, you know, versions of it, if I, you know, may say that. And one of the things, as we've talked about earlier, is a good theory is one that is testable, which means, you know, let's make a model and then it would be great if we could observe something and then try to confirm what the model is saying. And then, of course, the next step is if it's a great model, you can predict things that you didn't know before. So I guess one of the challenges for string theory is to get to a point where you could now say, well, how do we test this theory? And that's, I think, you know, something that there's a lot of work being done on that right here. And I think we should, you know, know more pretty soon. But, you know, I wouldn't dare to say more than that here.
That was very well, nice answer.
Thank you.
You were talking about relating what you know to people who aren't really scientists. Have any of you ever considered being professors and teaching your subjects?
So is that to the entire panel?
Everyone.
Sure, so why don't we go to Nicole first?
Yeah, definitely. My whole career at Stantec has been part-time, and that's because I've been continuing to pursue my passion in research, and that's why I'm going to be doing my doctorate. And I hope to be able to work part-time as a professor and part-time as a, you know, an applied consultant so that I can keep my perspective of both sides of that sphere.
Does anyone else?
I apologize, I didn't hear the second part of the question. If you could repeat it, please.
I was just wondering if you've ever considered being a professor and teaching your subjects that you study.
I'm terrified of grant applications, I have to be honest.
Of what?
Grant applications. Oh. I've seen those. They're terrifying. They scare me. They're like this thick, and you have to write stuff. I'm like, oh boy. Yeah. So that's for me. That's the scary part for me.
Well, you know, this is the same thing. I gave a talk a couple weeks ago in Guelph. Art Hill, who's the head of the food science department at the university, asked. They have a monthly series where they talk about food safety. So he asked me if I wouldn't mind filling in. And he says, what are you going to talk about? And I said, well, gosh, you know, I could do stand-up comedy for half an hour if I needed to. but how about what keeps me up at night? So, you know, have I ever wanted to teach in a university setting? Again, that paperwork thing scares the heck out of me. But opportunities like this, it's all about teaching. Because I think one of the at least for me, one of the greatest rewards is seeing folks that you have, you know, worked for you or that you've mentored, seeing them continue on a career path that takes them to new places. So it's always a teaching moment, always.
So as a professor myself, I guess I should, you know, comment on this. And you're right, so I get to do, you know, two very different things. One is teaching and, you know, teaching different kinds of courses. The nice thing is that you have some flexibility in, you know, what you teach. Every year you can teach a different thing, and how you teach it, of course. And part of what you're saying is very important, that, you know, teaching, let's say, first year students is quite different from teaching, you know, at a higher level, and each has its you know, challenges as well as, you know, great benefits. And the other aspect of what I do is the research, but I will tell you, the teaching is without the teaching, you know, my job wouldn't be as great as it is, which is because you see that immediate impact. It's very satisfying to be able to pass on, you know, all of your experiences and your knowledge and be able to, you know, hopefully inspire, you know, exactly of, you know, students like you to go on and figure out what it is that you want to do. So absolutely, teaching is one of the highlights of my job, for sure.
Thank you. These are great questions. Let's keep going.
A physics question. What kind of other careers did you look at before becoming a professor and a researcher, or what kind of other careers in physics are out there for women?
That's a great question. Let me throw out some numbers. One is that if you get a physics degree, turns out that on average, people who have physics degrees, the rate of employment is higher than the average. So that's the good news. What's great about a physics degree is not just that you learn physics, but doing physics is essentially about, you know, very different things. You have to be able to think about data, which we talked about, build models, analyze whether it fits what you see, and then test it, make predictions. This is all about critical thinking, really. And that's a skill that is applicable across the board. So it's not just that, if you study physics, you can only go work in a lab and design lasers, which is very cool, by the way. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. But, I know that there are physicists who work in, on Bay Street and Wall Street and finance. There's physicists who work in, of course, in science education is another big area. Physicists work in the healthcare sector, environmental sciences. There are parts of modeling and analysis that is applicable across the board. You name any industry, I'll tell you where the physicists are, involved in that area. Me personally, I started out thinking about a career in optics because of the telecom industry. As I said, lasers are very cool, and there was obviously potential for jobs in all kinds of areas. But I remember I started taking a course it was a course on laser physics as an undergraduate, and I did pretty well there. So then I got asked by the professor whether I wanted to join his lab and start working on a research project. I'm like, yes, wow, that's fantastic. So I started in the lab, and I really got bored. So yes, there were lasers, and I thought, wow, lasers, cool. But this is a while ago. So these lasers are not the cool ones where you just turn it on and it works, right? These were old style dye lasers, which literally means there's these little things are full of dye, and you have to tune the laser and have clean water and align it, and it works for 2 seconds and then it's dead again. So and once you get it to work, the main aspect was more engineering at that point. So for me, it wasn't for me. And I really learned something there, because it showed me that it's not enough to just, say, oh, this is good, and, I know I'll get a job. Because, it was certainly a path that would have led me to a great job in optics. But that's not enough. You really have to love it. And it took a long time before I could walk up to my professor and say, I'm not loving this. But I did, and he appreciated it. And for me, that was, a big step. And I ended up moving and trying something else. And that led to my degree in quantum physics and theory and thinking about something completely different. But, there are all these different areas. So what I started out is completely different from where I ended up with. And, jobs is very important, and careers is, of course, very important. But the best you could do is to follow your real interest, and you'll find your career. Absolutely, you'll find it.
Wonderful.
Here. I was just wondering if you could tell us more about teleportation.
I'm sure you've all seen the Star Trek version of teleport. I mean, wait, people know Star Trek here, right? Okay. So this is where, somebody disappears in one spot and reappears in another spot. So we're not there yet. Not yet. So we're not, when I say teleportation, we're not talking about, people or, objects that we can make them disappear and instantly reappear somewhere else. We're talking about teleportation of information at a, at, you know, at what we call the quantum level. So for example, a particle of light, which you know you probably know is a photon. So we can actually encode information in the sense of, you know, zeros and ones in these particles in very interesting ways. So for example, a photon cannot just carry, you know, a value of zero or a value of one, but both at the same time, you know, in a combination state. So those kinds of information we can encode in these quantum particles. And then the teleportation happens where when you have a pair of photons that we can make them talk to each other in such a way that they are connected. So that if I have a photon and then somebody, you know, around the world, well, we're not there around the world yet, let's say at the University of Waterloo campus has another photon which is connected to mine in a way that's called entangled, they're entangled photons, I could, you know, use my photon to do, you know, certain, you know, kinds of operations on my photon, and I won't get into all of that. But what I do on my photon, because my photon is linked to the other photon through this thing called entanglement, will impact the other photon instantly. So that's how you can sort of map the information from something that I have to that other photon on the other, you know, on the other person's end. And that person on that side can then reconstruct what my information was on their photon. And then mine, of course, will get destroyed. So that's sort of like disappearing here and reappearing there. And that's what we are at. And this has been done in experimental settings to prove that it can be done. And now we're talking about how can we do it across very long distances and how do we do it with more than one photon and so on. So it's very much at the experimental stage, but it's still really, really cool. And they pay me to think about this stuff. Oh, wow.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
Sharon, you said earlier that we need to broaden our horizons and take classes that we just wanted to. Mm-hmm. And I've actually done that already, and I found that it really helps me with science. But now my problem is I don't know where to go with it. So what would your advice be?
You know where to go with the fun stuff that you took?
I don't know where to go with any of it.
You know, I've got a son who's grade 12, and we're kind of going through. He's got the Y chromosome. I realize that, but you know, it's like, what do you think you're interested in? You know, you said your dad said just try your first year. You know, try your first year, and I it's a little bit different up here than what I'm used to in the States about classes. I know you have to pick like very specific degrees, so it's not something I'm used to, but. You know, get in your first year and take, you know, you like science, otherwise you wouldn't be here. Take a smattering of stuff, but yeah, take something over in the arts college. You know, take an English class, a history class. My daughter's a political scientist. Where that came from, I have no idea. but she's going to China next semester. You know, she's studying abroad at the University of Guelph. So just take a smattering. Talk to the TAs, talk to the grad students, talk to the professors, you know, attend stuff like this, and, you know, something will click. And if it doesn't, don't be afraid. I think you said your dad said don't be afraid to fail. Mm-hmm. You know, don't be afraid to go, you know what, this isn't for me. I got to do something different. But give it some time. You know, my first job out of school, I was a second shift QC inspector in Hammond, Indiana. Now, I grew up 20 miles from New York City, and I thought Chicago was backward, okay? So here I am in a not very nice part of Indiana, but I slugged it out for a year and a half, learned an awful lot about the business, and then knew what I wanted to do. It's kind of like paying your dues a little bit, you know? So just try something, give it enough time to really know that, boy, you know, this isn't for me, but ask a lot of questions, talk to a lot of people, you know, pick their brains.
Thanks.
Don't limit yourself.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We're here.
I was wondering if you've ever had any doubts about your career choice, whether you wanted to do something else in science or completely differently, like maybe in, I don't know, law or something like that.
Beautiful. And to the panel, so maybe we'll start with Tanya.
Yeah, totally. Many times over. I think that's part of discovering what you like and what you want to do is being tested, and you guys are tested in school and in your daily lives and what you're doing, and it will continue through your life and in your career choices, and hopefully some of those tests are really, you know, pivotal ones that, that make you look back and think, this could be something different, or maybe I need to think about this again. And like Sharon said, like my first job I did, I think 2 years, and then I realized, wow, if I really want to do more, and I was started in hydrogeology, and if I wanted to do more of it, and I wanted to get further into projects and be more involved and do more interesting stuff, I had to go back and get a master's degree, or I just wasn't going to be able to do the kind of neat projects and stuff I saw my peers doing who had gone back to school. And I had to think about it, like, do I want to go back to school? I don't know, do I want to go back to school? I guess when I'm like, do I want to be poor again? I guess I'm going to be poor again. And just kind of go through that. And then again, while I was doing my master's, as I was teaching, and I was like TAing courses, and I was poor, and I had buckets of work, and I was contract working at the same time, like, do I really want to do this? I don't know, do I really want to do this? And so, and I still have those tests as I move through my career. And every year in our career, like at our company, we reevaluate our career, and I'm sure they do it at Maple Leaf and a lot of companies. You take that time once a year or twice a year, and you sit back and you think about what you're doing, and is this what I want to do, and are these the people I want to be involved with? And you constantly want to do that, and you want to reevaluate. So yes, constantly, regularly, and it's important. And then yeah, and sometimes it will turn you in a totally different direction.
Nicole, do you want to speak to that at all?
Sure. I think that that's what's so great about having a career in science is that a lot of times a discovery you might have or something that you're working on can be applied to so many different fields. And where I work at Stantec, like technically I work in drinking water treatment, but all kinds of projects land on my desk and I'm challenged. And I have to say, you know, at first I'm like, I probably don't know how to do this project on my own.